Dear shooter, have bad habits creeped into your technique? Pulling out of your holster like you're shooting somewhere over a rainbow? Slapping your trigger like it just called you a bitch? You long-range shooters wrapping your thumb like you're actually trying to hit that urinal? Coming out of your optic like glaring at your bullet actually keeps it on target? Breaking habits are hard. Maybe it's time for that refresher course.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. and it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe and you are not sacred and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I looked like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast. Deer Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Good morning. And yeah, I think we all have bad habits. I know I do. And everybody keeps telling me to quit, but I'm no quitter.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. You've got to make the decision not to quit, and then you got to actively try to eliminate that bad habit of quitting.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right. So we see this all the time. We see the slapping the trigger. We see dumping rounds. We see, where's your thumb, Dave?
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
But you know who you are.
So I guess what's the most egregious one that you see?
They're all egregious. You're asking me to pick between all of my favorite teaching moments.
All right. Problem child. Statistically, what do you see the most?
For me, I teach a lot of rifle. And it's gripping the gun.
You're supposed to grip the damn gun. Otherwise,
it
falls.
In a situation, you cannot squeeze that trigger without affecting it during lock time if you grip the gun.
Prep the trigger.
Well, back to technique, right? But God love my grandpa. He put a Magnum cartridge rifle in my hands when I was like 5. And if you didn't hold on to it like it was trying to kill you, it knocked the crap out of you. So, not wanting to look like a wimp in front of my grandpa, I ended up developing all kinds of bad habits that I learned over time, sitting at a bench trying to put little groups in paper at obscene distances, that I was fucking it up.
So, all right, what about you? Because you were over there going, lighten up.
Yeah?
Yeah. What's the most egregious one you see?
The limp wristing. The jamming your firearm like you put jam on your toast at Sunday morning breakfast.
What I just said, don't hold on to it so tight. Now you're telling
them. There's difference between pistol and rifle.
Okay, but you're all right. So we're getting into the meat of it.
Yes.
And I think I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, that depending on what platform you're dealing with, techniques have to change. And I think a lot of people, especially new shooters, struggle with that because they learn one platform and they try to apply those skills to others, which in essence fucks them up. And it's a bad habit here, but it's the proper technique over there.
Well, and worse yet, men, we grew up with the culture of shooting, right? Before you actually get live fire firearms and ammunition, you're playing cops and robbers with your kids that you run around the neighborhood with.
Oh, so, dude, I tell you what, I've been doing a lot of landscaping and yard work and working on my property, and I have found some the most awesome sticks.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So they come to the culture of, I know what I'm doing. I've watched TV, I've seen a bunch of movies, Lethal Weapon, I can handle a gun, I know what I'm doing.
No, when I don't it's, have not, a clue it's not Lethal Weapon, it's the Naked Gun.
Well, actually, that one's actually got more better firearms handling in it than Lethal Weapon does.
Now, is it always the handling? Because we've all watched television shows with firearms that have optics mounted backwards.
Oh, that, yeah.
We've all seen it.
Well, we saw the Navy do that.
Yeah. It's a thing. You don't know what you don't know.
Okay. So, all right. So that, what that is actually called, there's a true scientific.
It's gonna get all sciencey in here.
No,
it
just
can't even say it out loud without stuttering. So.
It's a hard word.
So it's unconscious ignorance, and that's it's exactly what it means. And that sounds like a bad word, but it's simply I don't know what I don't know.
That's not very nice talk.
Well, it's not that, but that's what it is.
I agree with you.
You unconsciously, I don't know what I don't know.
But it's then fed by ego.
It is. And if you can get past that ego, then you can go to conscious ignorance.
Right.
Which means, okay, I know that I don't know. And this is where learning takes place.
What environment, though, is that most conducive in? Because I have had all walks of life at the bench. I have had male, female, youth shooters. And it's the, for me, over 30, male, bordering on very successful in their little world. Fighter pilots are the worst at it. There's an ego involved. But when you say, hey, you're doing this. No, I'm not.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot.
Right. So for the most common thing that I see is over-gripping the gun. Now, there are circumstances where holding onto the firearm is a good idea. But in marksmanship, we're sitting at a bench. You're not under stress holding onto that firearm.
No.
Really, at the end of the day. Don't let it bite you. But if you over-grip it, you cannot squeeze that trigger without manipulating it in lock time. And without getting too lost in the weeds about what lock time is, that's fucking up as a shot goes off.
Right. Well, and I've seen two schools of thought on it. And I've always kind of been of the, you know, I want to get behind the gun. I want to load the bipod. I want to make sure that everything is as super solid as it can possibly be before I let shot go off. And then I met and spent some time with Jim Gilliland, who is very much a don't put any more input into the gun than you absolutely have to, and just press the trigger, let the gun do what it does, and works.
Well, that hillbilly hits more than he misses.
That's right. And I had to really kind of go out and try that on my own. Now, to be fair, I don't use it all the time, but I think there's a lot of circumstances I've found, especially with shooting off of a barricade or shooting off of a tripod or anything where I'm not on the ground, super supported, that works better. So be open-minded, too, when you're going into this, because if you're not, you're not going to learn anything. But at the same time, take that Bruce Lee approach. Not everything's going to work for you, but be open-minded enough to accept that there are other theories out there, and not everybody thinks like you.
Well, you're close, Grasshopper. That's not exactly what he said, but the approach is right. The mindset's correct. Bruce Lee wanted you to be like water, be adaptable to the solution, right? And that plays into many of these things we're talking about, and it is a perishable skill. If you go hunting 3 days out of the year, you shoot 5 rounds through your rifle, 2 to check it, and whatever it takes to knock that animal down, right, and go home, you're not practicing.
No.
You are capitalizing on sheer naked luck and bad habits that have gotten you through, but you can't do it consistently.
Right.
Consistency is what we're talking about. We're talking about training and learning and getting better at it. You got to train it the right way.
You guys are saying that, like, okay, so there's things you do for a rifle that you don't do for pistol. There's different things. So how does that screw up, like, your 3-gunner?
Oh, bad. They've got to be multidisciplined. Mm-hmm. Running a pistol, running a carbine, and running a shotgun have completely different mechanics. Especially if you have moving targets on all 3 stages.
I would argue that a carbine and a pistol are very, very similar.
Except you have...
You just have more points of contact on a rifle.
Yeah.
But the way I've taught it is I tell everybody, you know, get their grip like they're going to grip a pistol, and then simply move that support hand forward.
All right, but you're now starting to blur the lines between what we started out talking about. They asked me what I saw the most. Mm-hmm. And in marksmanship rifle, I see over-gripping the gun as my number one challenge. There are other things that shooters refuse to see or understand that they do. Let's transition that conversation to carbine next. It's still a rifle, but it is a action sports rifle.
And it's treated more pistol-oriented.
Because it's action sports rifle. You're shooting it in an offhand position from awkward positions, and you're typically doing the job
generally
to move on to the next job you have to handle.
Right.
Right? With a long gun, you're handling it in one spot, doing it once, hopefully, and you're done with your task. With a carbine, that's not the case.
No.
So are we saying like three gunners are most likely to develop bad habits in one area or another because they run all three quickly through stages?
And if you ask any honest, competitive three-gun shooter, there is one discipline in that mix that they're weak at because they don't practice it. And when they do practice it, they practice it just enough to have a proficiency level, but they move on because they don't like it.
Right.
There is one of those three that they just struggle with.
Well, and I've heard this several times, you know, you race your strengths and you train your weakness. And that's hard to do because the stuff that you suck at, it sucks because so you don't want to practice it.
Well, we're wired for success.
Right.
And when I fail, God, I don't want to do that again.
Well, that's dopamine.
All right.
At the end of the day, you're not getting that dopamine spike, and it's no fun.
True. And I have been in rifle situations where it got boring.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to something like pistol or shotgun where I had a challenge.
Well, so like three gun, if we were going to tell you to practice, I'm going to have you go out and practice F class. And I'm going to have you do woodworking. And then I need you to spend 2 hours every day on a piano.
Oof.
Now what? Your piano's going to suffer. Not because you don't have the ability to learn it, because you have no desire.
So I've got a problem with piano. Have you seen these hands? I can't reach the goddamn keys.
He can't reach the pedals either, but
that's why he doesn't have a problem with putting a thumb over. It doesn't go over.
Yeah. It's naturally handicapped in some of the right directions.
Doesn't hit that urinal either.
My equipment's too short.
You're supposed to stand closer to the firing line.
Then he gets splatter.
I don't know what to tell you.
Don't aim for the mint.
I guess everything's hard. Pick your hard.
Yeah. And I suppose the two things I see most, and it's because I teach pistol the most, is I see slapping the trigger and I see dumping the rounds, where there's an anticipation of recoil. So right before the gun goes off, they shoot low. And I think I blame slapping the trigger a little bit on the way people have been taught gun safety, especially the older folks. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the older gun rules, you know, look at Cooper's four rules, you know, your finger is off that trigger until you are right there on target ready to fire. And that has become so ingrained in especially the older generation of gun owners, that as soon as that shot goes off, their finger's off the trigger. So when they start looking into more self-defense, the more tactical type, where you need to ride that trigger to reset, they can't. They have a hard time with that because, well, I'm not shooting, so my finger should be off the trigger.
So what we have here, folks, is a very elegant discussion of blasphemy. Mr. Cooper was never wrong. Ask anybody that actually ever shot with him. He will tell you that he was never wrong. And his methodology does work.
I'm not saying he was wrong, but I think that things have evolved. And I think if we still had Cooper around, I think he would have evolved as well.
Oh,
he was down. Very progressive in that regard.
Hands down. I think you see slapping the trigger as somebody that has shot shotgun a lot. And when you have a moving target and you're timing it, slapping the trigger is not all bad.
Okay, agreed.
And they've even taken that a step further. You have release triggers in shotgun. When you prep the trigger, you pull it all the way to the rear. You swing that shotgun, and when you let go, it goes off. It's totally the opposite of rifle or carbine or pistol trigger methodology.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're moving and trying to shoot a target with follow-through, slapping a trigger is not bad.
It's okay, though. Franklin Armory fixed that with the binary trigger, so now that's not an issue anymore. I mean, because now it goes off whether you're pressing it or letting it off.
This is true. This is true. Not that you can hit anything when you're doing that, but yeah, this is true.
Well, you just get your ass behind the gun.
Another thing you see.
I see that a lot, too. And that goes back to, that's old NRA methodology, is get that rifle in the pocket of your shoulder, right? With a carbine, that's not really so much the case, especially in the type of shooting that we're talking about, which is defensive-type shooting. You know, when we do our law enforcement, our military, they're on the offense, obviously, but centerline that gun. Get as much of your body behind that gun as possible. It also makes it easier when you're transitioning from strong to support side.
It does, but you're talking about multiple shot engagements now.
Right.
Now you're deviating straight into carbine world.
Right.
Right? It's a whole different bag of worms.
Wait, but if you want to get into it, if you look at the last 5 years and the evolution of the threats that we face, 10 years ago I was teaching that like your most likely engagement was going to be two muggers in an alley, you know, 9 to 15 feet, and that was it. Now, with some of the threats that we're seeing emerging, I'm saying that's more 5 to 50 yards, and you're probably looking at multiple 3 to 5 threats.
Well, fair enough. So we're going to deviate from the topic just for a second because I have to ask a question.
Dangerous.
In a handgun situation, which is what you're describing in an urban environment, how do you rationalize a threat at 50 yards?
I am looking at...
That's a long ways away.
It absolutely is. But here's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the rise in active shooters who more and more are not acting alone. I'm looking at the rise in the flash mob, which social media has made this very prolific. Look at San Francisco. This is why Walgreens is pulling out of California. Because these guys have graduated. They're not knocking over Walgreens anymore. They're going to the jewelry store. And you may have a threat that, you know, and if you identify that threat at 50 yards, you may look past six people. But that's the threat that you identified. That's what you got to deal with.
Hmm. All right, that's a whole different world than it, up close and personal.
Well, it is, and I see things coming up with the migrant crisis that we have, the illegal immigrants. You can't tell me all these people are here for a better life.
No, probably not, but how do you apply that to mechanics and training of mistakes you've seen? Obviously, that's a whole different course than it's normally been taught.
It's
an advanced course. This is not... Mechanics 101.
No, mechanics 101. But here's the thing, and we've talked about this before. I don't believe that, you know, as far as advertising, marketing, like I hate the idea of calling something advanced, even though I know I should. But all we're doing is applying the fundamentals in a different context because they're always the same. The fundamentals don't change. So that's what we really have to drill down on. And you're exactly right. We have to go back to what are the most common problems and what are the solutions. I think that's what we really should be focusing on.
Well, and we're talking about bad habits that have developed over time because you've started to ignore the fundamentals.
I don't know that you ignore the fundamentals. You just get complacent. I mean, when you shoot, if you're somebody that goes out and you shoot 10, 15, 20,000 rounds a year, and you're consistently in that 80, 90% hit rate, you get lazy. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, I agree. But training has got to be just as much part of your day as breakfast.
Agree.
Otherwise, it's a perishable skill.
But are they really training? Because they go out and they're practicing, right? They're hitting what they want to hit. Bam, 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 bam. They're still slapping the trigger.
Right.
They're still, you know.
They're not putting a positive grip on the gun. They're slapping the trigger. They're not indexing on the front sight and get a good sight alignment.
They're not slowing down for a real practice.
Well, it,
and that starts to keep the bad habits. The bad habits become the big thing now.
Well, let me back you up for just a second here. Let's define the difference. If you're training, you're learning. You're learning new skills. Practice is developing those skills and creating mastery.
But practice can also be developing bad habits.
Agreed. And Tony Blauer said it best. Be careful what you practice because you may get really, really good at the wrong thing.
He's absolutely right.
And I think that's what you're alluding to is as we go out and we practice and we're putting a lot of rounds down range and we're seeing results and we're seeing success, we do get complacent. We develop those bad habits because we're a good enough shooter that bad habit isn't detrimental.
Yet.
Right. Exactly. But it is a degradation in our true skill.
I think you see a lot of, we talked about competition shooters. And they get in their very specific wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're really good at what they do, they can put rounds on target and can do it very, very fast. But you get them outside that very specific situation, and those skills may not translate.
And that's exactly what you're talking about with three gun. You know, you get somebody who is a fantastic long range shooter, but can't shoot a shotgun to save their ass.
That would be you.
Yeah, I thought we were changing names to protect the innocent.
But anybody that knows,
I called you. You.
Anybody that knows 2 seconds about shotgun in a three-gun environment, it's less about shooting the damn shotgun and more about loading it.
Oh, yeah. And I'll be honest with you. That's kind of why I drifted away from three-gun, because it became a shotgun loading competition.
Absolutely right.
And I'm sorry. Here's what bugs me about three-gun. Who carries three guns?
Just three.
I mean, okay, fine. You're a fan of the New York Reload, and you clank when you walk, but...
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, I tell you what. Right now, if I had to go to Denver, I would too. But
true.
But in reality, you know, because if you look at most competitions were born out of, you know, defensive, military-type shooting, hunting-type shooting. You know, there's a basis of reality for all of the competitions that we shoot, right? I have never seen a reality other than maybe a SWAT breacher who's carrying a shotgun. Hmm. And the only reason he's carrying that shotgun is usually a short-barreled with a pistol grip and no stock to blow doors open.
Universal key.
Right. So I never quite... Three gun always bugged me in that respect. It should have been a two gun.
And they have those.
They do have those.
They have those.
And maybe that's what I need to drift into. But I just...
Yeah. But yanking you by your ear back on topic, just real quick, all of those have a basis in the fundamentals.
Well, they do.
You can't be accurate and go fast without a firm grasp of the fundamentals. And when we get students at the bench that have a failure in the fundamentals and they can't recognize it, that's when we start to have the hard conversations on the range.
Well, those, right. Yeah, those are the people who they're in competition. They do it all the time. And you say, ooh, you just slapped that trigger. And they go, no, I didn't.
When I sat there and I didn't watch the target, I was watching them.
Right.
And you can clearly see it. And their hit percentage starts to go horizontal stringing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as an instructor, you have little tricks to prove to them.
Oh, yeah.
That they've done whatever they've done. Does that always go to your benefit, or does it become an argument?
Well,
we have an example of this.
Yeah, but Well, no. That, but I will tell you, this is where running video is your best friend. I tell you what, the cell phone has revolutionized the way I can teach people.
Well, we had an example of this you ran a couple of years ago. It caused a little chaos in our world, but you had a student, we'll call her Shelly. She was at the range with you, and she was jerking and dumping the rounds because she was anticipating recoil. She had an improper grip. I mean, she had a master storm of things going on at the same time. You loaded her gun with an empty, and you watched that whole muzzle deviate feet across the target. And then she was mad at you because you put an empty in the gun.
Yeah.
Not because, oh, the light bulb just came on, I saw what I did. She saw what she did, but how dare you show it to her?
Oh, yeah. No, in fact, I think the exact quote was, I can't believe you lied to me.
Right.
But that you're exactly right. But what we were able to do then was, I was like, all right, so let's not try and fix everything at once. Because you're right, she had all kinds of things going on. It was like, all right, let's fix one thing at a time. And over the course of the next hour, we got this to where she was consistent doing the grip was right. The stance was right. Now let's work on your trigger press. Now let's work on your anticipation of recoil. And it just step by step, finally got it cleared up. But yeah, you're exactly right. It was, you lied to me.
Right. And if you're going to do this, you have to recognize the fact that it is an accumulation, a sum of the parts to become proficient.
Right.
We're not even talking about mastery. We're talking about being able to do the same thing time and time again and get it right. Once you get it right, then you can master it.
And we're not like a referee of football or something where you're pissed off because they made the wrong call, all right? We watched you for a half an hour. Okay, we're not making the call right this second, right now. We watched you for a half an hour. Don't tell me you didn't do it.
And we do that because some things are anomalies. You don't do it every time. So back to that consistency thing. You're absolutely right. So in pistol, is it slapping the trigger? Is it a grip? What is it?
Right. Well, and I'm going to get to you on that. But first, I got to refill my whiskey. The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division, maker of fine spirits including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company, whiskey worth fighting for.
Okay, and we're talking about bad habits, we're talking about consistency. And ultimately, what we're looking to do is we're looking to be able to make our hits on demand, okay? Now, with consistency, and I think long range is the best example of this. When we find a problem somewhere, and we've talked about this before, it's all about isolating variables. And that's how we fix things. So when the instructor tells you, you know, you're doing this, you're slapping the trigger, you're not gripping, you're anticipating recoil, things like that, you know, a good instructor is going to piece it out. Like, he's not going to dump all of this on you at once. He's going to small corrections. But it's what they're doing is they're isolating variables. Let's fix this, and then we can work on the next problem.
No, I think that's probably a fair statement, but from a student perspective, you have to hear the words that are coming out of the instructor's mouth.
No, they don't.
You paid him for his time and his attention to detail.
Some of them, I think they pay us to listen to their expertise.
Oh, we've had that completely in several situations. And you're right. Rifle shows it up a little bit more because each of the small variables make a big difference.
They're
downrange.
Huge downrange.
When you're doing pistol carbine, the angles are shorter, the distances are shorter, the margin of error, while it's still there, it's less of an effect at 10 and 20 yards versus it is at 400 yards.
Well, let me pull back the curtain a little bit. And this is the way we designed when we started doing the all-purpose rifle course with the carbine. Okay, we're shooting out 600 yards in that course. we do the mid-range stuff first, the 200, 300, 400 yard ranges, okay? And we're doing that off of barricades, we're doing it off of benches, we're doing it offhand, we're doing it kneeling, prone, whatever. I do that specifically. We don't start doing like the room distance stuff until day two. And I do that very specifically because you have to have your fundamentals solid to hit at that 200, 300, 400, 500 yard range. You can get away with being really sloppy when you're at room distance, say 10 yards.
So what you're talking about is the balance of speed and precision.
Yes.
You have, I recognize that the margin of error is what it is, but your fundamentals have to be solid. You have to get the hits.
Mm-hmm.
That's primary. But you have to get the hits in the time frame you need to get the hits. That
right.
is the balance you have to strike. And you right. can only go as fast as you can get the hits.
Right. And you've got to have your fundamentals down to get those hits in the time that you've got.
So back to slow and accurate will develop speed?
Yes. But I will tell you, that's something I have evolved my opinion on over time. I have always kind of been of the opinion that, look, you know, if you develop your technique first and the speed will follow. More and more I'm leaning to, you know, develop your technique, but develop it at speed. Because what happens is you will fall into the trap of, okay, something's falling apart, so I'm going to slow this way down and I'm going to figure out what's wrong. But if I am not developing my skill at speed, then I'm losing the potential for gains later on.
Okay. So you're, in essence, asking somebody that doesn't know how to drive a car to go 90 miles an hour and figure it out.
Well, no. We've developed that skill. I'm talking, you know, when we're in practice, we need to practice that skill and we need to fix our problems at speed once we've obviously developed our skill. But
I would also see the methodology of going fast for the sake of showing you where you need to fix your fundamentals.
Oh, I agreed. And I'm still in the mind of, you know, we slow down for safety and complexity. If something is going seriously awry, we need to slow down and figure out what's going on. But if it's a matter of I'm doing something stupid in practice, I'm not going to slow way the hell down. I'm still going to try and make those times that I need to make and figure out what's going on at speed. Because here's the other thing about that. If I slow way down and now I am hyper conscious of every action that I take, now I may not be making that mistake. So that's when I'm going to pull in another instructor. I'm going to pull in somebody that's a good shooting buddy to come and go, all right, here's where you're fucking it up.
Skateboarding.
Let's not go there.
No, but it's relevant.
It is, but God, I have scars from that.
Well, but you did things at speed you weren't really ready to do.
Yeah, well, my big one was a locked gate, but we won't go there.
Fair enough.
Wait, locked gate? Well, skateboarding.
Okay, so, all right, we're going to totally deviate. And story from my childhood, I was about, 9, 10 years old. And I got the bright idea in Casper. There is a pathway, concrete pathway, that goes from the event center down the hill to their softball fields. And I got the bright idea, I'm going to ride my skateboard down this thing. And I am just rocking and rolling, doing great. And I make the final turn to get to the parking lot where the baseball fields were. And I realize the gate is locked and shut. And I'm like, crap, I don't know what to do. So I bail. And there's a little bit of loose gravel on the asphalt, and I made about 4 or 5 really long jumping steps until I finally face planted and skidded about 20 feet and turned the entire front of myself into hamburger.
What did you learn from this?
Check the gate.
Before you go to the hill?
Yeah, check the gate before you walk up the damn hill.
So maybe you should have started at the bottom and walked your way up first?
Probably.
Weird how that translates into training.
It does, because you must start at the beginning, my friends.
You
or that gate's going
to
whoop your ass.
Every time.
But and this is opinion that could actually be an entire podcast to explain all this. But let's go back to what we originally started talking about. Now, you said something about coming out of your holster. Like you're shooting over the rainbow. Here's the thing about coming out of the holster. And this is one of those things where, and I know you're talking about bowling and fishing, right? But coming out of the holster is one of the most complex and dangerous skills that we teach. However, it's extremely necessary. You have to get this right. Because if you're a concealed carry holder, what is the likelihood that if you are in an event, you are going to need to draw from the holster?
100%.
Exactly. So that is a skill that you must have and you must have mastered. However, if we look at statistical data of accidents on the range and people shooting themselves, when does it happen?
Coming out of the
going
holster.
Going back into the holster.
One of the two, right?
See, I can come out of the holster without looking. I am still uncomfortable going back in without looking.
You should never have to go back in without looking because right. Why would you?
Right. The fight's
That's
over.
That's my point.
That's right. The fight's over. If you're going back into the holster, and we always talk about this, look it back into the holster. Make sure that your clothing is cleared. Make sure that everything's clear. Make sure you're going into the holster nice and slow and easy because the fight's over, right? The only people, and I say this in every class, I caveat it, the only people that have reason to go into the holster quickly without looking are law enforcement because they're going hands-on with a suspect. But here's the caveat to that. They wear a giant bucket on the side of their body for their gun.
They do. And it has class, what, 3 retention?
Yeah.
In the holster, it's pretty safe.
Right. But being able to get that back into the holster without looking quickly is pretty freaking easy because it is. It's literally like a 5-gallon bucket on the side of your hip.
Agreed.
And they usually carry it far enough off the body because of either some kind of an extension, some kind of a drop leg type of holster that it, even if they totally fuck it up, the round may go off, but it's going to miss them.
Interesting.
Because it's far enough off their body.
So this really affects the concealed carry holder.
Yes. But that's just it. 90% of the people that we see, that's who that is.
How do you train it?
You train them to look it into the holster.
No, you train it with a dry fire environment with no ammo around.
Well, that too. Or it goes back to we slow down for safety and complexity.
Correct.
This is one of the most complex, most dangerous things that we teach. We are going to slow it down for that.
But casting a rod or porpoising, as it's been called, coming out of the holster, right? You're getting it clear. You're out of the holster.
Mm-hmm.
But like Brandy says, you're casting a rainbow.
Yeah.
So there's a right way and a wrong way to come up out of the holster and present that firearm.
Right.
If you don't know what you're doing and you do it fast, dang near 100% of the time, you're going to porpoise.
Mm-hmm. Well, or you're going to bowl it.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're gonna come straight out of the holster, and you're gonna arc it upwards. The problem with this is, we teach it the way we teach it because there are biomechanics involved. Okay. We can, if we do this properly, then we have biomechanical stops that tell us when to rotate the gun, when to drive it out, where to drive it to. That all work intuitively with what our body does naturally. When we porpoise it, when we throw it over the rainbow, we fish it out there, we do some kind of a bowling move, when we drive it out there, now our sights are going up and down and we're trying to get stable. It's no different than when you're transitioning target to target horizontally and you start flock shooting it and you get horizontal stringing across the target because you're not looking first and driving to your eyes.
All right, so in that vein, as you draw and present that pistol, right, the old school method of bullseye shooting teaches you to close an eye.
Okay.
So as you do that and you're fishing for sight alignment,
mm-hmm.
you're losing time.
Yep.
Both eyes open is a hard thing to train if you've been trained to shoot with one eye closed.
Well, it goes back to when do you need to use your sights? And
not in the basic your self defense, the close what 5 to 7 yards. If you're using your sights, that person must be what 2 feet tall, six inches wide.
But depending on the skill level, they may need to. And that's not...
You're just putting a hole somewhere. You're going to slow them down.
I don't disagree. But you may have somebody that's a very new shooter. And even that 8-inch target at 4 yards, they may need to use their sights. That's not a detriment. That's their skill level. Now, here's the thing, and this is the caveat I always make in my classes is, okay, you know, we use the little pump drawing where you've got, you know, 10 pennies or whatever, right? And all shooting is a balance between speed and precision, but you only have 10 pennies. So if your precision is at a 6, your speed better be at a 4. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way forever. As you develop your skill, as you practice your skill, that's going to change.
That's probably pretty valid. But you have to train that way.
You do.
So can a YouTube video get me there?
Not usually.
No, because you need someone to sit there and watch as you do it slowly and correct you at that time. Because YouTube, you're going to develop habits.
Me watching somebody on YouTube is a whole different thing than somebody watching me do it.
Right.
That input of how I'm screwing it up is more important than watching somebody that thinks they can do it right show you how to do it. And both are components of learning, but you've got to get one-on-one with an instructor that is willing to watch you do it.
Right, because and that's exactly where I was thinking was, okay, you watch YouTube, and you can imitate it all you want, but until you have somebody there that can make corrections in real time, because you may hit a stumbling block. And what are you going to do? Go back to that YouTube video and watch the same thing over and over? And it's not giving you any other input on how to fix what you're screwing up.
And I will tell you that YouTube videos are really only valuable on those things that you can see the moving parts on. In a precision rifle setting, they're useless.
Right.
You cannot pick those out and determine how you're doing it right, wrong, or indifferent from a YouTube video. You cannot. On a pistol, okay, you can kind of see and judge what they're doing, try and mimic it. But in a precision rifle setting, you can't see it.
I'm not sure you can necessarily do it with a pistol. And I use the example of somebody anticipating recoil and dumping the round. Because that's something that, unless you have an instructor there that can show you ways to fix it and actually show you that you're doing it, you're never going to fix it. Because that's one of those things that I really don't have a technique to make you stop. All I can do is show you that you're doing it. You have to stop.
Well, and what you're saying, for them to go, that must be what I'm doing, they're self, you know, telling them that that's their problem. What if that is not their problem?
Right.
What if it's something else and it's not that you're doing that? You just decided that that was it because YouTube told you so.
Oh, I see that all the time. I see that all the time. The internet's given everybody a voice, even the idiots. Be careful what you watch.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and like go off on anybody, but YouTube is, and the internet in general. I mean, it's a great place to get information, but be careful what you digest.
Well, there's good stuff out there.
There is.
It's pretty rare in the grand scheme of stuff. There's a lot of folks that are trying to become an influencer or somebody that gets free shit for reviews because they have traffic on their website. It doesn't mean they're any good at what they do. It just means that a lot of folks watch them because they're dumb. It happens.
Well, and that's just it. Especially when you're looking at YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, are they an entertainer? Or are they somebody that actually knows something?
And I knew this topic would come right here. And it's going to go right to vetting your instructor. Because YouTube is no different than having an instructor that is a fraud. Or somebody that is watching a lot of YouTube videos and thinks they know what they're doing. And then now they're going to be an instructor. vet your instructors. Talk to people who have taken classes with them. Go sit in and watch a class if they'll allow it. Because if you don't get the right instruction, you're not fixing your problems.
Well, and I would invite everybody to go over to Michael Bain TV on the radio. He actually talked about this topic a week or so ago. And because he was talking about it in the context of that attendance to formal instruction is down. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one is the economy sucks, and people just don't have the disposable income to go do it. The other reason, and he specifically called out USCCA for this, and I've been doing this for 2 years now, that if you look at the most common firearms instruction out there, it's instructor development.
So not everybody's an instructor. How does that work?
Well, they're cranking out more instructors than they are end users.
So and everybody's an instructor now.
Oh, yeah. If you like, and he even says this in his podcast, like he Googled the Front Range, just instructors near me, and he did the Front Range of Colorado, so Denver, Fort Collins area. There's hundreds.
And that's not just USCCA. NRA did the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't vet everybody. They take a class online and padoof.
And you've even got higher level people doing this. I'll throw in the caveat that some of these higher level guys are a lot more strict about who they actually certify as an instructor. But same thing, you know, they're certifying more instructors than they are end user students.
Which equates to a watering down of the actual education quality.
You're exactly right. I use the example. When I went through the IDS, and at that point it was the combat focused shooting instructor development. It was 6 days of hell.
It hell because the curriculum was hard, or was it hell because the instructor was yelling at you?
No, it was hell. Because it was 6 days starting at 6 a.m. going till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was very high level. This was college doctorate level information that you had to perform, like, the next day. It was, you know, not only the high-level instruction, the high-level information, I mean, neuroscience, biomechanics, things like that. This is not your everyday, here's how to shoot a gun type of information. There was a lot of information thrown at you. You had to perform, you had to regurgitate, you had to, and put it in your own words type of stuff, right? You couldn't just, you know, memorize and regurgitate. Today, that same program is 3 days and lacking more than half of the information that we were given.
So as we advance forward and we see the program being cut down, why? Are they doing that because they're trying to develop more instructors, or are they doing that because the needs of the training have lessened?
Common Core.
Well, and part of it too is when I went through it, it was for a 2 day class. Today it's for a 1 day class. So a lot of the information isn't necessary. Some of the things that they cut out, they moved into other programs. For example, the 1 day IDS, we don't deal with things like, you know, shooting on the move and one-handed, weak-handed type stuff. Like that's moved into the advanced pistol handling. So I get it from that perspective, but at the same time, there's still a lot of things that I still use, even in a one-day class, that aren't taught on the instructor level.
Interesting. All right. I'm just processing this because you started out in the combat focus arena, and that program evolved into IDS,
mm-hmm.
and you've used words like neuroscience and biomechanics, which are awfully big, egg-heady words,
mm-hmm.
and transitioning that information to a student that says, hey, I got a new gun, take a look at this thing, and it's brand new, shiny, never been fired, it's out of the box. They don't even know anything about it. Complete beginners. you can't start using terms like neuroscience and biomechanics on a new student.
No, but here's the thing, and Einstein said it best, okay? If you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough.
I've been saying that for years. If you learn something well enough to teach it and communicate it to the all walks of life you get in the class, then you know your topic.
Right.
You've just now begun to learn.
Well, and you have to keep it simple. So I'm building the Deer Shooter website, and it is recommended to keep the reading level at 8th grade or below.
You know where that comes from, right? Military manuals are written to an 8th grade reading level.
Why?
Well, because back in the day...
No, why?
I honestly, I don't know.
Because the masses can't absorb it unless you do.
Well,
they're going to clickbait you and go off to something else shiny if they don't understand it.
Well, how many times do you get egghead on me with optics and I tell you, all get the fucking the crayons out?
But getting egghead with you on an optic is not that hard.
No, it's not.
And I get this from time to time when I'm talking about optics to a group, specifically gun riders, right? And one guy in the back of the room will ask a really technical question. And I'm kind of excited because this dude kind of understands enough to actually ask that question.
And Brandy tells you to shut the hell
and
up.
So, and so I ask him, you know, we'll take this offline and we'll have that discussion because I've got a room full of folks that could care less, right? They want their soda and their popcorn here in a little bit because that's what they're here for. But this one guy won't let it go. And eventually, I'm like, all right, guys, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to answer this. And I do. And we get into technical jargon. We get into the math and the sciences and talking about coatings and lenses. And the next thing you know, I've got a room full of zombies that have their eyes have glazed over. Brandy's in the back of the room giving the you've lost everybody signal. And one guy raises his hand and says, I was told there wouldn't be any math. You're in an optics discussion, y'all.
Yeah. There's math.
If you're in a firearms training situation, there's math. You typically have to understand the physics of what's going on to understand how you manipulate that. And that's an advanced discussion. And I know you hate that word, but...
No, but... yeah, whatever. But I try to get into those advanced discussions in a way that I can boil that down to what does this do for the shooter?
Good luck.
I think I do pretty well at it, so you just shut the hell up. And Brandy's giving me the, you've lost them, you've gone way the hell over time, because we actually have this time, but this was a lot of fun. And I hope you guys kind of get where if you go into a class and you've got an instructor that's leaning on you for one reason or another, you're doing this, you're doing that, understand that like, he's not harping on you, he's not trying to be mean to you, try to help.
And I'm going to throw out a call to action. Any of you folks out there that are listening, reach out to us with your frustrations that you've had trying to learn something or trying to work on some fundamental, and ask Jason, ask myself, and we will try and help you or point you in the right direction at least.
Well, you know, and Brandy, she'll tell you which way the range is.
And we have an email address right now. It's hosts@deershooter.com.
Say that again.
Hosts. It's plural because there's three of us @deershooter.com.
Yeah, we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, so when is that going to become a problem because there's hosts?
Well, there's multiple until I fire y'all.
Done. How do I get fired?
Oh. That's another show. That's
damn
a whole
it.
Other show.
Damn it. I'm going to, well, I guess until I get fired, I'm just going to keep blaming my gun.